Venerable Bhikkhus, brothers and sisters, today I will deal with the five factors which promote your attainment. The five factors are your devotion, your effort, your mindfulness, your samadhi, and the development of wisdom. These are general factors which helps you right along the effort you made to reach the goal. These must be promoted in your mind, not that purposefully done, but with the correct approach made to develop yourself along the path. These are roughly the outcome of that effort you are making. First thing is devotion. You must have faith in the Triple Gem. That faith does not arise merely because you have blind attachment to the Triple Gem. That should arise from within when you realize the truth more and more. It is the truth that will create that devotion. The truth of the philosophy preached by Buddha. His philosophy is realistic. There's nothing imaginary. His philosophy can be identified by you everywhere and every place in life. It's not something in the nature of a concealed thing. In fact, when you summarize his philosophy, one could say he has clearly shown us who we are. We have been living in a deception, and we have lived lives as worldlings up to this moment, not caring to exactly find out, probe into our life, our behavior patterns, and find out exactly who we are. We have blindly accepted what the world has told us, categorized us, and that is the worldling. When you say worldling, he has six things to look after, look forward to, and enjoy the best. That is the sixth sense basis. The worldling is controlled by the sixth sense basis and the experience he gains through them. Therefore, his one object in life is to promote more and more satisfaction through these bases. That's the worldly life he leads. But you look differently at this worldly behavior. You find in depth there is nothing substantial in this happiness which the worldling search for. It is just a delusion he has created in his mind. And that delusion has been created with the consciousness creating a being in you. And around this being, his entire life is built up. So you can imagine, the worldling life is a life of complete ignorance. Ignorance of what he is and who he is. Merely a slave to his habits which he has created around him. Slave to the sixth sense basis which controls him completely. And he accepts everything on the face value, not making use of his mind to look into anything in depth and realize something more realistic below the surface, which is deceptive. He leads that life like that. But Buddha's philosophy has created a nature in us where we are now finding that more and more we probe into ourselves and our activities, we begin to realize the truth Buddha preached, and also how deceptive we have been in our conduct as worldlings. The more and more investigation you do into yourself in the course of your progress along the path, the devotion to the Buddha, the devotion to the doctrine he has preached, and the devotion to the Sangha rises higher and higher and higher, because you are then along the path proceeding towards the goal where the followers of Buddha have finally reached, and you are in the dark as a worldling. Now you are creating a light unto yourself, realizing the truth, and with that light becoming more and more clear as you go up, developing yourself along the path of wisdom. Of course, a lot of cults have gathered to this philosophy in the course of time. Many nationalities would believe in different ways of showing their devotion to the Triple Gem. But Buddha emphasized the fact that such outside activity is not helpful to you. Then one would ask the question, why? What is this meritorious act we are expected to commit? Meritorious act is an act which you commit having created a good volition in your mind. Volition free of attachment, free of aversion, free of doubt. That is a meritorious act. Meritorious acts are confined to existence in the bhava. That's in the 31 worlds which being can enter into. Beyond the stage of anagami, such meritorious acts have no effect at all. Do you see that the meritorious acts up to anagami are effective on you because they help you to create a comfortable birth in the births to come? Because such acts, they give you a return for the good you have done, and the return you enjoy. At the same time, if you have done any wrong, that too you have to suffer from. But the real devotion to Buddha, you begin to feel after you have pursued the path to develop your inside knowledge. And that path is having built up your virtue or developed your virtue within you, having developed the concentration within you based on virtue, developing it up to the levels of first absorption, second absorption, third absorption, the fourth absorption. And then you divert your attention completely to the development of wisdom. And as you develop your wisdom, you begin to realize what a blind life we have led in the past. Just being led by the nose through the experiences gained by the sixth sense bases, which have misled us completely. And now you begin to see the impermanence of all these things little by little. The devotion is built up more on the realization of the three truths of impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things and the soullessness. Because they are so realistic that when you challenge every experience which you have nourished in you in the way of as something of value, and when that experience is confronted with the impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things and the soullessness, you find that the value of that experience, though it appeared to be in a worldly way as something big, something great, something attractive, it vanishes. Therefore, the true state of your devotion reaches as you enter the stream. And there onwards, your true self appears. You dispel all that you have gathered in your previous births. Dispel all the defilements, little by little, one after the other, that has bound you to this cycle of births. And as you gain your freedom, after every step you develop, the devotion becomes more and more, more and more. And it is a convincing devotion, which you enjoy very much, because those defilements which you nourished in you in ignorance, they not only brought you misery, they brought you heaviness in every aspect of your life. When you say lightness in the body and mind, means something which you enjoy when you are free from defilements. And these defilements which you have nourished in your ignorance brings about an atmosphere of disturbance always in your mind, unsettled state. And as you go on getting rid of these things one by one, with the development taking place in you, you find your devotion rises. And it is just not the devotion that we display in following certain cults. Take the place of, let's say, worshipping Buddha morning, noon and night, uttering all kinds of stanzas in praise of him, offering all kinds of pujas which you can afford to offer. Those are all cults that you have developed. And they have got into your lives so impressively that you find if you miss any practice you have carried on, you find that you have not respected Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. Therefore you go on committing these things. But in truth, you remember at the time Buddha was dying, there was a complaint made against a bhikkhu that he was not crying along with the other bhikkhus, feeling sorry for what is going to happen in a minute later, that is the passing away of Buddha. Buddha at that time was very weak. You couldn't possibly have disturbed his mind with a trivial matter of this nature, looking into a complaint made by shallow-minded bhikkhus. Anyway, in his insight he found that this is a great lesson which he can teach to the world. At the time of his death, he summoned the bhikkhu, that's Dhammarama, and he asked his bhikkhu, there is a complaint lodged against you that you are not crying along with the others about my passing away. Is it true? Dhammarama replied, yes, Venerable, it is true. Why did you behave in that manner? Then the answer he gave was, I joined the order of monks with one motive in mind, and that is to attain my liberation before you pass away. There are only few minutes more for that event to occur, and I have no time to waste in crying. I thought I would make the best use out of these 2 minutes or 3 minutes left prior to your passing away, so that I would achieve my goal in your lifetime. And accordingly, I made an effort to concentrate, meditate, and develop my mind to reach my salvation. Buddha was very weak at the time. He raised his hands and said, sadhu, 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 twice. He said, this is the bhikkhu that pays the best homage to me or respect to me. And on many occasions Buddha has emphasized the fact that what he requires or what he wishes out of us is not just blind faith, intelligent outlook about the doctrine, and also to practice it intelligently, because he has emphasized that he is merely a person who can show the path but not a person who can get another to attain Nibbana. The effort you make to develop yourself to enter Nibbana is something which must come out of you. No other party can help you in this effort. Therefore, the effort must be on your own. And it is just not a blind effort. It's just not following a pattern or following a way of life as dictated by somebody, you follow this and you will see the result. No. Buddha in his preaching clearly indicated every aspect of the result you would achieve in pursuing the Dhamma. He said, be a light unto yourself, or be an island unto yourself. Don't seek refuge from any other. There is none in this world who can help you. Seek refuge within you. What you are searching is within you. What you have to get rid of is also within you. Therefore, your effort should be to cleanse the stable within you and not to plead for outside help to lead you along the path to your liberation. Buddha has clearly emphasized this. And in our effort in developing virtue, concentration and wisdom, that is what we are doing. We are depending on ourselves, our effort. Nobody can remove the defilement that you have developed within you. You have to realize that such development is an impediment to your liberation. And knowing exactly the outcome of pursuing such defilements, you have to make an effort on your own to get rid of them. Therefore, this Dhamma is a Dhamma where light is thrown at you to show you exactly where you are. In regard to the cleansing aspect of your life, from all the useless practices that you have developed, all the defilement that you have unawares cultivated in yourself by not knowing what you are doing and pursuing a worldly way. You are made to realize that these are the defilements, these are the defects in you. The Dhamma clearly indicates that to you. Then what is expected from you is your effort to cleanse them out of, your effort to get rid of these defilements. I have often emphasized that Buddhism helps you to get rid of what you have done to yourself. That's the brief summary of the philosophy taught by Buddha. What you have done to yourself in your foolishness, in being careless about yourself, in following a worldly way blindly and thereby leading a life of births and deaths forever and ever and ever, not knowing that there is a path that will free you from all these misery and lead you to final salvation. Therefore, devotion that should be developed within you should be based on complete truth, understanding and realization of the doctrine, not just blind faith. What is the idea in your going before Buddha and appealing to Buddha, please help me, please help me, please help me, I like to enter Nibbana? Buddha would ask the question, in what way can I help you more than I have done to you? I have clearly shown you what your defects are. I have clearly shown you what your defilements are. I have clearly shown you a path, how you should get rid of them. Instead of following that path with your own effort, what is the purpose in appealing to me to help you? My task is over. What is left before is your task. And that task is to practice the philosophy preached by Buddha. And then clean away inside all that you have gathered to make you lead this life as a worldling. All those defilements are in you, in yourself. Therefore, a correct effort must be made knowing the Dhamma, having faith in the Dhamma, having getting devoted to the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha, to follow the path shown by Buddha for your final liberation. That's devotion that is expected. It's not blind devotion. Blind devotion would create a good karma, because your mind is free from attachment, free from aversion. There may be doubt there, we may not have a doubt. But anyway, these three things contribute to commit a good act. So by worshipping and this and that, you can commit good acts, which may result in a birth after life in a deity world. What are you expected to do there? Spend your good time in enjoyment for a period, not forever. And after that period is over, to come back to the other lower births, you see, according to the karma you have committed and the effect of that karma at the time of your passing away from that heavenly abode. Therefore, that's a temporary stay there. It doesn't in any way help you very much. Therefore, this life we lead now as human beings is the best life one could lead, to develop ourselves, to make an effort on our own and realize the truth. The next comes devotion, effort. There Buddha has clearly indicated the type of effort you have to make. He says, develop what is good in you. Now you may be a very kind-hearted person, develop that further. You may be devoted to the religion, develop that further. You may have metta, develop that further. You are a person who doesn't get angry, develop that mood further and further. Those good things that you possess, in keeping with the good things that the philosophy of Buddha expects you to develop within you, such goods, if they are already in yourself, develop them more and more and more. Then develop also other essential needs which will lead you along the path for your liberation. Other good qualities such as mindfulness, samadhi, Those are essential things one should develop when you are proceeding along the path for your salvation. Make an effort to develop them. That's a second effort you must make. The good that you possess, develop them further. And the good that you need possess or develop within you, to go along the path for your liberation. Find out what they are. Adopt them in yourself and develop them. You must make an effort to develop those. Then a third, Buddha says, get rid of that which is bad. By now, you have that amount of understanding about the religion, about the philosophy of Buddhism, and can make out what is bad in you. Certain feelings may be bad. Certain defilements may be there, like attachment, too much attached. Or you get upset for the slightest thing. That is aversion. Such things you must make out. These are bad qualities in me, which does not help me to proceed along the path leading to my liberation. I must make out these defects in me and then try to get rid of them. Now, if you are a hot-tempered person, Buddha has stated that practicing loving-kindness enables you to get rid of that attitude in your mind. Therefore, practice loving-kindness more and more and more. And as you go on doing that, you will find you will be getting less and less angry. Because loving-kindness is a soother, so to say. It soothes your mind. It bears no malice against anybody. Always wish something good to others. So that soothes your mind. And that, little by little, overcome that anger that is present in you. Likewise, in other defilements too, which you possess, you must be able to understand, realize what they are. My defects are these, I must make an effort to get rid of these defects. And the fourth is, see that you would not develop anything adverse to the path you are pursuing. Maybe bad company. You may mix up with a person who is not suitable for your association. And you learn a bad habit from him. Let us say smoking a cigarette or practicing something which is not in keeping with your way of behavior. Something adverse to your life. Something creates an ill effect in you. Therefore, you must be careful when picking up associates whom you have to mix with, that to select the most, the best, who is helpful to you and harmless to you, who will give you advice at the proper time and direct you along the right path. Good kalyana mitra. In the absence of a good kalyana mitra, be unto yourself and see that you are careful not to permit unnecessary, so to say, habits getting formed in yourself, following somebody without forethought and planning, without proper understanding, without realization what you are coming in for by such company. Those are the four things that you must bear in mind to make an effort. If you actually keep these four things, you become a good man. You will develop what is good in you. You will introduce what is good and then develop that further, because that goodness is essential for the development along the path. You will realize what is fault in you, what is bad in you. Understand them and make an effort to get rid of them. Also, you will see that you protect yourself from any harm from outside in the way of associating with those people whom you should not associate, and thereby getting into practices which are harmful to your pursuing the path. That's the right effort you have to adopt. The best one could recommend in that way is lead a life unto yourself. There are very few people in this world who are helpful to others. They are self-centered. They will make the best out of you if you keep company with people and leave you in the lurch. That's the nature of this world. Of course, the world is fast changing. In the changing world, you must be careful not to forget your aim in life. Your aim in life is to seek liberation. And Everything that you associate with or meet with must be measured in the light of that aim in life. Well, if I mix with this person, how far will it affect my development along the path? If I adopt this means which is practice which is now getting used to, how far that will obstruct me from going along the path? These are the questions that you must always raise about your environment, your association, and your acquaintances when you build up such acquaintances. Therefore, leading a quiet, peaceful life of your own without getting mixed up with unknown quantities and then falling into trouble, that is the best one we recommend, because this is not the day, this is not the time, this is not the period where you can find good people to help you, to encourage you along the path. Almost every other person you come across, they are all out to make their personal gain, fulfill their aim to their advantage, sacrificing anybody just because he has become an obstruction to gaining what he wishes to be. Therefore, what you should do is lead a life of your own. And if you pick up an acquaintanceship with somebody, it must be done with great care, because you don't know how he would react. And Buddha says it's rather difficult for one to make out a person immediately. You associating with a person a week or two will not help you to find out who that person is. It takes a long time. Long period of association will only reveal the true nature of the person, because that person would like to adapt himself to a situation, to circumstances which appeals to you, concealing all that he has within him which are harmful, to build up a good friendship between the two. Therefore, you must be very careful and knowing that he is a good associate. He is a Kalyana Mitra who will help me in my need, who will help me along the path, who is helpful to me in all the good I do. Such a person is so and so, and I know him, I have tested him, I have found him to be true, and then mix up with the person. Kalyana Mitra, Buddha says, is very essential. It's an essential item to proceed along the path. Without a Kalyana Mitra, it's rather difficult for you to pursue this philosophy. Who is a Kalyana Mitra? Kalyana Mitra is a person who is always encouraging you to do the good thing, encouraging you to follow the path for your liberation, discouraging you at all occasions when you try to do something harmful to yourself or to another, or which will be harmful to the path you pursue for your liberation. That's the Kalyana Mitra. One day Venerable Ananda told Buddha, Venerable Sir, I feel that this religion, this sasana, depends 50% on the association one has with another. Kalyana Mitra. Buddha said, don't say so, Ananda. The development of the person along the path to his liberation depends 100% on the association you make with a friend. If you mix up with a good friend, if your association is a good friend, he will be immensely helpful to you to gain your liberation. If, on the other hand, if you mix up with somebody who is harmful to you, misleading you, he will be an obstruction to your path. Therefore, you must be careful in choosing a friend, an associate or acquaintanceship with anybody, to pick and choose the best person after much testing, not just be led away by a mere sight, just not be led away by a mere utterance by him, which indicates that he is trying to be helpful to you. Just not be led away by a shape and form of the person. It is the essential thing that you should look into his quality of the person, that is what is within, not outside. If the quality is good, if he is a sincere friend, and his sincerity is always for your good, not to lead you along the path to your destruction, and such a friend you get closer and closer and closer, he'll be helpful in many ways to go along the path to your liberation. And Buddha said so. We must have a Kalyana Mitra. So the Kalyana Mitras the lay people will have will be members of the Sangha who are developing themselves along the path, and such people will always guide you in the right, on the right line, help you to develop yourself, advise you where necessary to be cautious about certain things. So both ways you have been well guided by the Kalyana Mitra. So good association with them is essential. Then we come to the third one, that is sati, mindfulness. I have addressed you in a fairly lengthy discourse about mindfulness. If I always think, and this idea comes to my mind very often when I am peaceful and settled and thinking of them, without mindfulness we would have not progressed anywhere along the path for our liberation. Why? Because we have become slaves to our habits. We have now come to a stage where without any thinking, following the promptings of the mind, but promptings that have been created in the mind as a result of habit. And those habits we know now are not habits helping you to get along, to liberate yourself, but habits which promotes the extension of this worldly life from birth to birth. That is the sort of habit which one has to be careful about. And what can help you? We say, we have been in this span of life, you see, we have let so many births, experienced so many births in the past, and we are living now in this birth. Many more to those who do not pursue the path, there will be in the future many more births. And now we are developing little by little a worldly pattern of existence, and our behavior pattern is in keeping with the worldly way. This behavior pattern which you have followed in the past and in the present and in the future too is a pattern that is not conducive to your liberation. It's for continuity. So when you are thoroughly soaked, thoroughly embedded in that way of existence, how could one on his own, without proper guidance, without some mysterious prompting from within, check your ways, check your behavior, check your conduct, so that you will be always put on the right track, reminding you always what you are pursuing is wrong? Who does that for you? Is a human being? No, it's difficult. He could do it on an occasion like this when he is delivering a sermon or discourse. Apart from that, there is no one to help you to give that prompting to you at any moment you need that prompting. And that prompting is given within you. That is why I say, emphasize, practice as much as possible mindfulness, brothers and sisters, because that is the key to your salvation. Nothing else. Every thought that arises there is mindfulness there directing you. Don't think in that manner. That is not helpful to you. And the mindfulness will tell you this is the way you should think. And you must adopt that way immediately. Likewise, in all your activities outside too, mindfulness will check you and say, don't commit this act in this manner. This is not in keeping with your development. This is not a thought that you should harbor in your mind, because it is harmful to you. Like that, regularly there will be prompting from inside as a result of the mindfulness. Therefore, mindfulness must be cherished. Mindfulness must be developed 100%. And Buddha has rightly introduced mindfulness in the first instance in pursuing your four postures as if it's mindfulness is practiced in a physical way. That is, the four postures are physical acts. So when you are being mindful of the four postures, mindfulness is not a thing that the world ever practiced. His way of behavior is completely prompting from the heart. But here mindfulness is prompting him everything so that he will be well guided by the mindfulness. And the only way to introduce mindfulness by a worldling into himself is through physical activities. And Buddha rightly has done that. And that's a very very, very methodical move to pursue the four postures, you very often commit mindfully to do those things. Then you become become used to mindfulness. The physical approach is the first, and then it penetrates into the mental. And when it penetrates into the mental, you will be careful even in your thinking to be mindful. That is the essential guide for your development, brothers and sisters. Even in your behavior pattern here, be unto yourself, always watchful of what you are thinking, fixing your mind to your inside, not the outside. Because if you fix your mind to outside things, you will be completely misled, because what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you contact and what you think are all deceptive, misleading. Therefore, if you follow those things, you will be misled more and more. But if you follow the promptings of the heart, now that you have trained this heart to look in the right direction, the heart within you will tell you, don't think like that. Don't see in that manner. Always the promptings are to guide you in the right way. Therefore, mindfulness must be built up. I won't cast a remark at any one of you, but I think if you become a little more quiet and peaceful, mindful of what you are doing, only a word comes out of your mouth because it is essential. And no two words are exchanged with another way where it is not essential, then you will be developing faster than you are developing now. Brothers and sisters, even in the practice of your samadhi, what is essential? You need that mindfulness. Because samadhi is you are trying to fix the mind at one point. When there is a constant attack to that activity of yours from either attachment to aversion, these are two extremes. And not permitting any looseness in that mindfulness, so that any other outside thought can creep into that and disturb your mindfulness. You fix your mindfulness in such a way there is no gap in that mindfulness. You are fixing it firmly. What can a thought of attachment to aversion do with it? They can't disturb you because they can't enter in your thinking stream, because you have kept the mindfulness in such a way so firmly, giving no chance for any other thought to creep in and disturb your mindfulness. That's the essential thing. Mindfulness will fix you clearly. And in that fixing, permit no other disturbance from outside to harm your continuity of mindfulness. That is what you should bear in mind, brothers and sisters. If you pursue that, your attainment is fast. Your attainment is quick. Your attainment is your achievement in your, let's say, samadhi, and in the realization, it's very much faster. Why? When you are not mindful, you are living in the world. What is the world? World of false fabrications, delusions. When you live in the world, and then again get back to reality, and short stay in the realistic aspect of life, again fall back to the delusion, and this sort of changeover from one condition to another, it's just trying to fix yourself mindfully in the right way, to follow the philosophy as closely as possible, not permitting the delusion to enter into that stream of thinking of yours, will help you to develop faster. Because it's natural, you know. It's quite natural, you know. Your difficulty in trying to develop something within you is you are giving in to the worldly way of life still. How? By not being mindful. You still see something attract you outside. Your mind catches that. A certain amount of appreciation goes on in your heart, in your mind. About what? About something impermanent. Considering that as something permanent, you begin to enjoy it. And that you don't know is harmful to your development. You must always be guarded, not permitting the worldly way to enter into your life now that you are making a mighty effort to get out of this worldly way. That is the essential thing. So you make an effort and see how successful you will be. How many things you are developing, your entire, let's say, outlook will be different. You'll be very sober, very peaceful, but you are very attentive. You're not giving any chance for the worldly pattern of existence to interfere with your developing mind. and disturb that mind from further attaining heights of realization. That's the essential thing. Therefore, mindfulness is very, very important. I like to emphasize more and more and talk about this matter, if I could possibly, for hours even, because mindfulness is the key note to this philosophy. That is why Buddha preached a doctrine promising you that you will attain if you practice in the way he has directed to you within 7 days and gain your liberation. To that extent he has given you an assurance. Why? Because he has termed that discourse which he has given for your liberation as the four foundations of mindfulness. Just see, he did not say four foundations of one-pointedness or samadhi. He just said that four foundations of mindfulness. In four ways you have to practice mindfulness in such a way that you will keep away from the worldly way of life. And your mindfulness will be such clear mindfulness, not permitting the worldly atmosphere, worldly behavior, worldly conduct, worldly thoughts to ever come and interfere with your developing mind in the right way. And that attitude can only be brought about by mindfulness, brothers and sisters. Therefore, be mindful. Talk less. Always look into your inside. Don't allow the eye to control you. Don't allow the ears to control you. Don't allow the four, five, six sense bases to control you. Objects may strike them. Probably you may note, but your mindfulness is so strong, you know that if you accept anything in that manner, through a sense base, you are getting misdirected. Therefore you hear, that's all, you just drop it. You see, you don't care to follow that. Your mindfulness is be careful, be careful, be careful. Careful about what? Of being misled. By what? By the six sense bases. I have emphasized very much in my discourses to you about the harm done to you by the six sense bases. If I make a very categorical statement, you are tied to this worldly way of life by the six sense bases, and your struggle, your fight, your battle is with these six sense bases and nothing else. These six sense bases produce sankhara, and they have created a world right around you, a fictitious world. And you still believe in that world, and try to live in that world, and at the same time try to gain your liberation from the trappings of that world. Therefore, brothers and sisters, turn your mind inwardly. Then you will be keeping away from all this unnecessary interference from the six sense bases. When you get used to looking inside and living that life, then what happens is, their approach to you, their attack to you will be less and less forceful. And there comes a day when they will not be able to disturb your inner peace which you have created after the practice of looking into yourself and not outside. Therefore, that is the best advice I can give you. Venerable Moggallana was asked to deliver a discourse in the presence of Buddha at a place where there was a housewarming ceremony. A hall was built on behalf of Buddha, and Buddha was invited by the Sakyans, the palace householders, to come and open it. Buddha went there, had his meal, but he was feeling weak as a result of a pain he was suffering from on his back. He summoned Venerable Moggallana and told him, "You give a discourse on this subject. I shall rest here for some time." And he folded the robe at the place where he was seated having his meals. He stretched himself and was resting when Venerable Moggallana delivered this sermon. He said, "You are like a hut. If your hut which you have built is made up of dried bamboo leaves, the walls are made up of dried bamboo leaves, the roof of the hut is also made up of dried bamboo leaves, there is always the possibility of a disaster occurring to you, because there are six persons around you always bearing torches and approaching your hut. At any time your hut may catch fire because your hut is made up of bamboo leaves. On the other hand, there is another person who has built his hut. He has built his hut with mud. Also, he has taken precaution to see that he has covered the roof also with a similar inflammable substance. And these six torches, torch bearers, they come to this hut. Even if they rub their torches on the wall, no harm can be done to you, because you are equipped well, and you have built a hut of mud which is not subject to attack from outside. So what you are now trying to do is, you have been living in a world where your hut has been made up of bamboo leaves, dried bamboo leaves. You are deserting that hut, now being aware that it is subjected to an attack at any time from six sides. What is this attack? Attack through your ear, through your nose, through your eye, through your tongue, through your body, and through your mind. These are the enemies that are attacking you. Anytime they will set fire to your hut. But on the other hand, if you have built a hut made up of mud, they can attack you, but you will never be overcome by those enemies, because you have safeguarded yourself very well from outside attack, and that substance that has helped you to build this inflammable, you see, I should say, hut that is secure from any attack from outside, is mindfulness. Therefore, build your hut with mindfulness. Live in a mindful hut. Then you will be perfectly safe. And the development you expect along the path shown by Buddha will be easier, quicker, and without much obstruction on the way. On the other hand, the obstructions that you are confronted with when you go along this path for your liberation are not obstructions created by anybody. These are obstructions created by yourself as a result of your carelessness, because you are leading a dual life in your effort to liberate yourself, with one leg in the worldly way and the other leg along the path that leads to your liberation. You can't paddle a canoe with one leg in one canoe and the other leg in the other canoe. You are nowhere. So what you should do is decide for yourself, I am going to lead my life so that I will gain my liberation as early as possible. And to lead that life, I must be careful about myself, not permitting my mind to wander about and accept any more objects through the six sense bases and misdirection. Not that you are not going to think, not that you are not going to see. See for yourself. It doesn't matter seeing an object, but see that object in mindfulness. How? Being aware that it is impermanent. Hear anything, doesn't matter. There is no harm done to your hearing. But when you hear, don't take that into your heart and accept it, but be fully aware that that is also impermanent. So if impermanence will be the protecting factor, the guard that will protect you, and that guard can only act so long as you create the necessary atmosphere for such activity. What is the way you should create that atmosphere? Mindfulness. Therefore, you can open all these doors so long as inwardly you are mindful. Let anything attack your ear or nose or tongue or body or mind or thinking, because you will never go beyond the limit. Which limit is the limit that you must be careful about? That is the limit. If you go beyond that, you are going to create a thought in conformity with the object that you have received from outside to that sense base, and you go with that. You surrender yourself to that object in the way of creating an aversion of attachment. But on the other hand, if you are careful, you are not permitting such objects to creep into your mind. You see, maybe that you may hear, you may see that's creeping into the mind in one way, but there is always a mindfulness that they are all impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless. That is something which you must bear in mind. Then we have mindfulness, then we have wisdom. This wisdom which you are searching to develop or make an effort to develop, it develops at four stages, brothers and sisters. The first stage of development of wisdom, of the truth of impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things and the soullessness. These are the three truths. Realization of that is Samma Sambuddha. Realization of that by anyone of us is Buddha, attaining a Buddha stage. That Buddhi, that wisdom can be developed by four stages. First is stream entry. You get an idea. The awareness is there of what this wisdom means. The second stage is when you have removed half the fetters of attachment and aversion from you. 50% of those fetters been destroyed by you and your mind is little free now. At that stage you would again realize the impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things and the soullessness. In the third stage you would develop this to a more impressive state is at the stage of your non-returner stage. There you cut off all your bindings, all relationship with the worldly way, and then you drift to a state when you automatically gain your liberation, and that is in one of the POA boards. And the fourth stage is the final stage by gaining your liberation as becoming an arahat. There you finally realize the true nature of impermanence fully 100%, unsatisfactory nature of things and the soullessness. And that realization is the wisdom that you have been searching for, that you have been making an effort to develop within you fully, and the realization of these three realities of life to the fullest, to the maximum, is reached when you attain the state of arahattu, that is becoming an arahat. And that's the fourth stage. Therefore, brothers and sisters, bear this in mind. Buddha has clearly shown us a path. If we understandingly follow, there is development in you. Every minute you practice the path. Therefore, what is required is just not to appear as if you are practicing, but wholeheartedly devoting your full attention to the practice and then developing yourself. Earlier you develop yourself, the better. And once you have developed yourself and reached that highest point, then your next stage is be of service to others, and all of you can be of service to all the devotees in Singapore, and be a light unto them, guide them, and protect them. And that is the greatest service you can do to humanity, to your kind. Well, I have described to you very generally the five factors which you have to maintain and develop within you for your attainment. I have emphasized very much on this mindfulness, because that is one important factor which is promoting your development very closely. Therefore, from now onwards, be mindful. Turn your mind inwards. Any thought that arises about anything, matters connected with the outside world too, your awareness is always there because your mind is towards turned inwards. And that awareness will tell you whether you are going to associate with that object or to expel it by realizing the true nature of that object as impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless. By that way, you guide yourself very well, so that only that which is important and helpful to proceed along the path will be entertained by you. All the other unnecessary things that would normally attract in a human being, you are now careful to see that you select them and then throw them out. In what way do you throw them out? By really understanding their true nature as impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless. When you apply that to any object, maybe the most attractive thing once upon a time to you, but this stage you apply this true knowledge to that object will vanish from your vision. Therefore, brothers and sisters, make the best effort. Few more days to go. You have all the circumstances here, the atmosphere necessary for your development, and also we are here to help you and guide you. Therefore, I only wish that you will make use of this opportunity and then go back to Singapore, not as laymen, but as liberated souls. Thank you very much.